Welcome back, folks. Third hour of the War Room is on. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're going to be back to cover a lot of news this last hour, but I'm going to go to a video that does a great job debunking the myth of white privilege. This was posted online. White privilege debunked in 5 minutes. Here it is.
Take your time.
All right. So white privilege is largely a myth used by cultural Marxists and the far left to guilt trip and shame whites into relinquishing what little power and influence they still have in the West. The broader culture of many Western countries is almost explicitly anti-white. On a routine basis, calls go out from major media figures, politicians, celebrities, others to reduce the amount of whites in big institutions. This is often done under the guise of promoting diversity and inclusion. These are Orwellian code words for less whites. Major figures in our media and culture like Stephen Colbert, Anderson Cooper, Jennifer Rubin, Joe Biden, and others have hailed the decline of white demographics as a good thing. If our leaders and cultural elite favor whites as a group, they have a funny way of showing it. In 2016, the hashtags OscarsSoWhite, HollywoodSoWhite began trending on Twitter, and numerous big-name celebrities like Jane Fonda, Jonah Hill, Joaquin Phoenix put up public statements calling for more diversity in the industry. Jewish actor Seth Rogen, in a 2020 interview, stated that he was actively taking measures to, quote, make less things starring white people. The same pleas to disenfranchise whites rings out in professional sports, politics, the media, book publishing, advertising, modeling, and virtually every industry you can think of. The media has even run stories saying that camping, rock climbing, and cycling and other outdoor activities are too white. What's astonishing, though, is that when whites are the minority of a particular industry, nobody says diversity is needed. The NBA and NFL leagues are dominated by blacks at 70% and 74% black, respectively. Hip-hop, R&B, rap, jazz music is dominated overwhelmingly by blacks. Yet nobody is calling for those leagues or industries to be diversified with more non-blacks. The only sports league that they say needs more diversity is the NHL, because it's majority white. In 2020, the NHL set up a Hockey Diversity Alliance and formed four committees to, quote, study the intersection of race and hockey. All the major corporations and government agencies in the U.S., Canada, U.K. have initiated these diversity programs. Diversity is evidently a one-way street towards the total erasure of whites and their replacement with non-whites. Let's look at a few real-world examples of black and brown privilege generally. Look at how the media treats victims of police shootings. Most people know the names of George Floyd, Trayvon Martin, Breonna Taylor, Michael Brown, other blacks killed by police or by whites. These names are known around the world thanks to a cacophony of intense media coverage. Yet very few have heard the names of Tony Temple, Autumn Steele, Jeremy Martis, Cannon Hinton, Duncan Lemp, and other whites who were killed either by police or by blacks. The major media clearly values the lives of blacks more than whites and focuses only on the stories it can use to drive home an anti-white, pro-black narrative. Look at how white and black racial activism is treated by the state and the media. Putting up posters that say it's okay to be white are routinely met with police hate crime investigations and media hysteria. But blacks who do analogous messaging for their race are met with praise and march through the streets menacing whites with shouts of black power and demands for reparations. And they go unmolested by police and basically uncritical media coverage. Yet when whites march for their rights peacefully, they're met with a heavy hand by police, Antifa rioters, and intense demonization by the media and politicians. In Canada and Europe, pro-white activism is often met with criminal charges and state harassment. We have other examples from the UK. A Burnley football fan was recently investigated by police for an incident in which he flew a White Lives Matter banner over a stadium. He was, quote, handed a lifetime ban by his club and sacked from his job at an engineering firm. Contrast that treatment with an Indian professor at Cambridge University, Dr. Primavada Gopal, who tweeted, white lies don't matter. A news article reported that, quote, the University of Cambridge has spoken out in support of one of its lecturers who was hit by a wave of abusive messages for tweeting white lives don't matter. The university defends the right of its academics to express their own lawful opinion. But imagine if it was a white professor who said the opposite. Then we have the phenomenon of whites pretending to be non-whites.
And that's just a recitation of things that everybody knows. Is this not obvious to everybody? You really need to be told this stuff?
have the widest selection of Patriot apparel and some of the best designs. I sat out with our sponsor and said, what do you want? I said, I want the widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, hats, you name it. I want classic Americana stuff. I want pro-Trump stuff. I want InfoWars stuff. I want comedy stuff. Christian, Crusader, pro-life, pro-Jesus, classic 1776 stuff, quality Leering Center, you know, joke stuff, classic InfoWars gear. It's all there. I mean, just cool shirts saying, I love America with a German pointer on it. I mean, just good stuff. All sorts of resistance to tyrants is obedience to God Punisher shirts. I mean, there are some kick-ass stuff there. Look at that one, American Supply Co. I designed that bad baby. America established 1776 Supply Company. Woo! I like it. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Dismantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. The War Room with Harrison Smith is live right now on X and Band.video worldwide.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. We still have a lot to cover in this final hour. I hope that you will support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. Trying to think of how we navigate through all that I have to cover. I think we'll start this hour with Iran. We'll start talking about Iran. So obviously, we continue to teeter on the edge of all-out war with that country. And for an unstated purpose, I'll say that. It's not that there's not a reason that we're going after Iran. It's just that they haven't actually enunciated that reason with any specificity or honesty to be found. They'll give you lots of other reasons that don't really make any sense, that have been the same claims made for the last 30 years about them getting a nuclear bomb, or now it's about ballistic missiles, and it doesn't really matter. It's all in service of Israel, and everybody knows it. And it's getting embarrassing to see people try to pretend it's anything but, and sort of longer it goes on, the more ridiculous it seems. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at the end of the day whether the American people want it, because we don't live in a democracy and the people in power fear their sponsors and the, intelligence complex of Israel more than they fear their voters, who, of course, are at the beck and call, at the demand and under the sway of mainstream media, who will instruct people to vote for whoever goes to war with Iran and will try to destroy anybody that doesn't. Just take a look at Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massey, or the general that warned Trump not to get into war with Iran. He's been fired now at this point, because anybody that's against war with Iran gets fired. You understand that? And anybody who's against war with Iran and hasn't been fired is hanging on by their fingernails and has been fighting tooth and nail for the last year to maintain their position. Pete Hegseth is one of these. J.D. Vance is constantly being caught in the middle of these. They've both had their underlings forced out because they share the belief that American soldiers' lives shouldn't be wasted on a foreign country. So they're still hanging in there, but pretty much everybody else has been ousted severely. And yeah, this is from joehoft.com. War is coming to Iran. Everything is being readied for war with Iran. The time is near. And I'll just add, you know, whether you like it or not, and against all reason and morality, it's happening. It's just happening. If you think this is weird, if you think this is odd, then you don't know history. There is really not a war. Well, I guess, I mean, they really fine-tuned their propaganda in the last couple decades. So you could argue that, like, the American people were in favor of war with Iraq, but it was entirely based off lies. And so it's kind of like, well, they were in favor of it, but that's because they believed the claims that weren't actually true. If they knew those claims weren't true, then they wouldn't have bought into it. But regardless, if you go back to World War One, World War Two, I mean, 90% of Americans are against intervention until we intervene. And then, you know, people turn around, because at that point you're in the war, all the media falls into line, everybody starts pushing, and anybody arguing against it is labeled as a traitor who is, you know, a subversive trying to destroy the country from within, so they get silenced. But every time, the American people want nothing to do with what the hell's going on. In that case, in Europe, in this case, in the Middle East, we don't care. It's not our concern. It's not what we have to worry about. Here's just a random story that has been on my desk for the last couple of days, sort of tangential to the Iran war, but it colors the Iran war. For me, it overshadows the entire Iran war. And it's a story about a little town called Fall River who banned driving because snow cleanup was still underway 4 days after a blizzard happened. So in a town in the northeast of America, they're so incompetent, they're so at a lack of resources that after a heavy snowstorm, the roads are still blocked. People are still trapped in their homes 3 and 4 days after the storm hits. So to me, it's like, it's not even about war with Iran. It's about the simultaneous expenditure of resources overseas to deal with problems that have nothing to do with us, while simultaneously, we can't even do the basics here in America. We can't even get the basic function of government done, which I think, yeah, like clearing the road should probably be one of those. I mean, go to even the, you know, most hardcore libertarian. It's still like, it's the classic thing. It's like, well, the government does build roads, right? It does build and maintain roads. It can at least do that. Like, no matter what, even if you don't like the government and your education and the welfare, it's like somebody's got to maintain the roads, right? And it's, I don't want a corporation doing that. It's just, can the government just clean the roads, please? When I pay half of my income to the government, can they at the very least make it so I can drive on the roads where I live? Especially in places, it's different, you know, in Texas, we had a big snowstorm in 2021. It took weeks to clear, but we don't have any snow clearing stuff. It never happens here. Why would we have snow plows like rotting away in warehouses for the once every 30 years we need them? But if you're in the Northeast, you should be good at clearing snow at this point. At this point, you should be aware that snow is going to be an issue and you should have the ability to solve that problem. So again, it's not like a major national story, but maybe it should be. Maybe as a sign of the times, as a sign of the collapse of our entire system, there should be more noise made about the fact that a town in America, and I'm just thinking about like the elderly people, the infirm people, people with disabilities, I mean, they're stuck in their homes. And if their electricity goes out or something, what are they supposed to do? And then actually earlier today, another homeless person was found frozen under the snow in New York City. Because dozens of people have died during that snow. So again, as we're talking about war with Iran, just remember it is at the cost of getting anything done here in America. Just basic functional services here in America are going totally unaddressed while we spend inordinate amounts of money, time, resources, and energy doing crap that doesn't affect anybody ever. Not doesn't affect Americans positively in any way and never will. So that's just your backdrop. Sorry, back to war with Iran now. Sorry, maybe you're one of these people, you know, in the snow, in the Northeast, trapped in your home, while, you know, the government calls you racist for one. And it is. To be honest, clearing snow is white supremacy. It absolutely is. I should go to that other video. I had another video from earlier this week of, anyway, we don't need to get to it. But, yeah, white privilege is your neighbor shoveling your walkway for you. So maybe you're one of these people and you're trapped in the snow. Fear not, okay? I know you may be trapped. You may be running low on food supplies. You may be concerned about a family member or neighbor that has limited mobility and has been trapped in their home and might die because of the incompetence of your local government. But that's fine. Ignore all of that. You're fine. Everything's great. We're going to war with Iran, and you have to be in favor of that. Yesterday, the talks with Iran fell apart. Iran's terrorist regime would not give an inch. They thought they were dealing with Obama or Kennedy. They learned they were not. Wow, very tough, Joe Hoft. Who are they dealing with? Who are they dealing with then? A couple of Israeli real estate moguls that Trump has tapped to negotiate for us? Fantastic. The U.S. just handed Iran a document that is not a negotiation. It is a capitulation order. Okay. Okay. I mean, they say that like it's like, yeah, so tough. It's like, but why don't you just bomb them? Just go bomb them. Why are you doing this whole play acting where you're pretending to be diplomatic? It doesn't make it look like, well, we've exhausted all other options. Guess we have to attack him now. It just looks like you're stringing Iran along because you're not just warmongers. You're like deeply untrustworthy. That's what it seems like to me. So it's like they say it's a negotiation, but it's not. They say we want Iran to do these simple things and then everything will be – we just don't want uranium. That's just – that's it. We just can't have them have a bomb. I mean, that's what it's all about, folks. Except they're demanding that they just like completely capitulate or else be destroyed. So it's not a negotiation. It's just a performative sort of – you're sort of like the mouse playing with – or the cat playing with the mouse before you eat it. You're not negotiating at all. You're not negotiating in good faith. There is no ability for Iran to capitulate and have a positive outcome from this. You're just going to war with them and trying to position yourself in a way that you can argue it's not your fault or that you tried to be diplomatic, but it sort of gets undercut when you're like, this is a capitulation order, not a negotiation. No, we know. Wall Street Journal obtained the American demands presented in Geneva today. Destroy Fordo, destroy Natanz, destroy Isfahan, hand over every gram of enriched uranium to the United States, zero enrichment permanently, no sunset clauses, no expiration dates, behave for the rest of your lives. In exchange, minimal sanctions relief up front, with more only if you comply with everything forever. It's like, you bastards. Like, who would accept that? It's like, destroy all of your own stuff. Go to war with yourself, basically. Set yourself back 100 years in scientific development. And in exchange, we'll just keep starving you with our sanctions. And they won't agree? What? Oh, these brilliant negotiators. Do they understand what negotiation is supposed to be? Or are they just sort of trying to start a war? I think they're just trying to start a war. Iran's counterproposal, approved personally by Khamenei, arrived showing almost no change from the previous round, a 3 to 5 year enrichment suspension, increased IAEA oversight, willingness to dilute stockpiles, but zero flexibility on the one demand Washington says is non-negotiable, permanent zero enrichment on Iranian soil. The gap between these two positions is not a negotiation gap. The U.S. just handed Iran a document, non-negotiations capitulation order. Iran closed the last door from a pulpit in front of God. Ayatollah Ahmed Khatami stood before Friday prayers in Tehran today and declared the Islamic Republic has never accepted suspension of enrichment and will not accept it, not temporarily, not partially, not under any conditions. Friday prayers in Iran are not sermons. The state policy delivered through divine authority. When a senior cleric declares enrichment non-negotiable from the minbar, he is transmitting the supreme leader's final position through the only channel that outranks a diplomatic cable. Washington's demands for Geneva of destroying all of their stuff, the regime has basically said, no, that's not happening whatsoever. China has told its citizens to leave Iran. The country selling Iran missiles evacuated its own people. Ambassador Huckabee emailed Jerusalem staff saying, leave Israel today. Canada issued its strongest warning. India, Germany followed. And then Khatami stood before Friday prayers and slammed the door on the only demand Washington calls non-negotiable. Six governments evacuated, one Ayatollah spoke, and the distance between America's only acceptable outcome and Iran's only acceptable position became infinite. Tomorrow, Oman's foreign minister meets Vance in Washington, carrying Tehran's message. After today, we know that what the message cannot contain. It cannot contain zero enrichment. It cannot contain permanent suspension. It cannot contain the one thing America says it must. Diplomacy requires two open doors. Today, Iran locked its from the inside and handed the key to God. I think they're just done being strung along, I think is what it is. I think every time they try to negotiate in good faith, America changes the conditions at the last minute and then acts offended that Iran doesn't just immediately capitulate. So we're going to war with Iran. U.S. Ambassador to Israel Mike Huckabee urges embassy staff to leave today. An email sent out to the staff of the U.S. embassy. Huckabee wrote, those wishing to take authorized departure should do so today. He wrote, while there may be outbound flights over the coming days, there may not be. Because they're about to go to war, obviously. Iran rejects U.S., quote, excessive demands, but talks scheduled for next Wednesday. That story's at Infowars.com. After the third round of indirect U.S.-Iran talks held in Geneva on Thursday, Omani Foreign Minister Badr al-Busaidi, who was chief mediator, cited significant progress, which echoed the general positive assessment on the Iranian side. We're sort of a little bit of mixed notes, but that's not unexpected after all. Last time we engaged in the 12-day war and bombed Iran, it was immediately after Donald Trump told them they had 10 more days to decide. So it's not exactly a surprise. But the absurdity of going to Iran at this moment against all prevailing American sentiment, against what is good for America, it's happening for a reason. The extremity to which they're going has a purpose or a reason or a motivation behind it. And that is that this is their last chance. And I'm going to go to two clips from Tucker Carlson now, even though I don't need to, because if you watch me and if you watched American Journal before I hosted War Room, then you've heard this over and over again, which is nice to see Tucker Carlson talking about this as well. And maybe I'll elaborate a little bit on the other side, but we'll go to this one. It says, Tucker Carlson on Iran. Everybody knows the only reason that this is happening is because it's Israel's last chance to get this done. Something I, again, have been saying over and over and over forever, because obviously they've gambled absolutely everything on Gaza. They have destroyed their reputation overseas. There is absolutely no trajectory in which 10 years from now, everybody loves Israel again. The young people are the most radically anti-Israel, and they're only becoming more numerous and will only gain in power in the coming decades. So Israel sees its grip on American politics slipping irrevocably, and the damage that they've done through their actions in Gaza, America's not the only one that they're losing. And if they don't get Iran done right now, there's no coming back from the damage they've done to themselves in the coming decade. So let's go to Tucker Carlson laying this out, as I have many, many times before. Let's watch.
Everybody knows the only reason we're having this war is because Israel wants it. This is their last chance, they believe. This presidency is the last presidency where they're going to have unequivocal bipartisan support. Period. You can't primary every Thomas Massie, and there's a whole army of them coming at some point because everyone can see what's going on. And you can shut down X, and you can just shut down the internet. You can be like Great Britain and arrest people who protest Israel, but attitudes are not going to revert to what they were 5 years ago. Sorry. And they know this. So this is their last chance. What's so amazing is that Israel, which at least is acting in what it perceives to be its own national interest, is joined by its shills in the United States, of course. But really, its only other ally in this is the American news media, whose job it is to tell you the truth and inform you as to what's happening, to tell you, hey, wake up. The world could be changing, and it's going to affect you and your family. That's their job. And instead, they've been lulling you to sleep with the same variety of transparent lies and propaganda.
Yeah, he's exactly right. And I think it gets worse than this. I think it goes farther than this. I think the Israelis and the Israeli power structure, the Epstein cabal, if you will, those out there still operating, it's not just about getting this done now so they can get Iran out of the way and they can no longer require America to be their support. Because like if Iran was taken out, then Israel wouldn't need America as their shield so much anymore. Right now they need America because if you think back to even October 7th, like why after October 7th did Hezbollah not get involved? Did Iran not get involved? I mean, they stayed pretty much out of the conflict. They got involved a little bit here or there, but there was no like major like, okay, this is it. Now's the time. The big fight we've all been waiting for. Let's do it. And they didn't do that because it wasn't about Israel. It's about the giant American aircraft carrier sitting just off their coast saying, if you attack Israel, if you get involved in the Gaza-Israel conflict, we will blow you to smithereens. So without America there to shield them, Israel wouldn't have the freedom of action it does. Once they take out Iran and therefore the proxies like Hezbollah, then they won't need America there anymore because the threat will be gone. And so the Israeli elite are not just trying desperately to get Iran done now because they know that the sentiment in America is slipping away from them in terms of war with Iran. It's slipping away from them forever, irrevocably. And they don't even plan to bring it back in any way. The plan that they do have is to just increase censorship to a massive degree, keep buying up media outlets and pushing, obviously, fake stories that just pisses everybody off. Their strategy isn't actually effective in turning people in favor of Israel. It really just infuriates everybody even more, which is all part of the strategy because at the end of the day, once they get Iran destroyed, America is no longer necessary as a shield and is therefore just a burden to their greater ambitions of becoming a worldwide hegemon and a primary state rather than a secondary one. And so their plan with America is just to let it go. They just, as soon as they can get Iran done, and that will do a good job of like destroying a bunch of American military power. It'll weaken us significantly. It'll piss off people in America to a much more greater degree. So-called anti-Semitism will absolutely explode. But it doesn't matter, because once Iran's taken care of and America's massively weakened, then they can just sort of pull the plug on America, move the center of power more towards the east, and with the eventual plan of having Israel break free. So us going to war with Iran, it's not about like we got to get it done now or else we won't get it done later. It's like we got to get it done now so we can sever our connection to America and destroy it. That's really what it's all about. Tucker elaborates on this a little bit too. Here he is speculating about the Israeli leadership cozying up to nations like India because they understand that they've destroyed their ability to rely on America as their shield. Let's watch.
Bet you've decided we need a new superpower. Public opinion in this country has swung against us so hard, this bipartisan consensus that we're its closest ally is disintegrating before our very eyes. And let's be honest with ourselves, this is not going to continue forever. We need another country to be aligned with. Now, how many big countries are there to choose from? It's got to be physically large, big population, nuclear armed. Not too many. In fact, the big ones would be China and India. But China, unfortunately, is a Han ethnostate. So you can't really turn its population against itself in order to increase your own power. It's not going to work. It's resistant to this, to manipulation. And that leaves India. And it was probably no coincidence that the Prime Minister of India, Prime Minister Modi, spoke to the Knesset today about the ancient ties between Israel and India. Bottom line, yes, Israel is moving on from the United States at some point, probably sooner rather than later, to India. And so weakening the United States in a war with Iran is not all bad. In fact, it might be good. Because then there's no rivalry at all in your region. It's you, the only country with nuclear weapons, and everybody else. So you can kind of do whatever you want. You don't have to worry about hostile neighbors. You can expand the size of your territory, for example. You can move your borders in all directions. Who's going to stop you? No one.
So again, this is literally the argument I've been making since like 2024. Because it's been obvious, it's just been obvious to anybody paying attention. All you have to do is just look at their actions and not their words. And also look at their words because they're actually telling you. Like, I think one of the most interesting, compelling arguments in favor of what Tucker Carlson just said, that it seems like Israel is done with America, is their actions in the West Bank. Like, if their intention was to use America to destroy Iran and then continue to be friends with America, continue to rely on America, then they would be doing everything they could to stop the violence and the attacks and the annexation of the West Bank, because they know that the American government is against that and doesn't like that. And so they would be, if that was the intention, trying to play nice with America and say, no, no, that's not our intention at all. You just help us get Iran and we treat everybody nicely. And then later, after Iran, they would start taking over the West Bank. But they're taking over the West Bank now because they don't actually care about their relationship with America.
Alert, alert, alert. We're engaged in world-changing information here. The worldwide satanic pedophile networks, the poison shots, depopulation, the classified CIA documents about poisoning the food and water and medicines to make us dumb and more docile and controllable and to make us sick and die. Operation Artichoke, fully declassified this week. Total vindication of this broadcast. And now our credibility is higher than ever, but it takes funds to operate. So it's a win-win. I sell you supplements, super nutrient compounds that are the certified, best, strongest, highest rated, most loved, totally tested products at thealexjonesstore.com. And we have a massive sale, and that means you have until midnight Monday, March 2nd, to get our incredible, highest quality, concentrated creatine, private label, the top brand in the country. So good for your whole body, so good for your brain, good for everything. And you get a free bottle of Irish Sea Moss gummies. Each gummy is equivalent to like 40 grams or something of Irish Sea Moss. It's so good for you. A bunch of other super nutrients. And our high-quality Shilajit. You get either or. You choose. Absolutely free. That's a $35 value. Absolutely free with our creatine. There's also store-wide 25% off all apparel. That ends midnight Wednesday, March 4th. But let me just overhead shot show TV viewers a couple of things right here. KU Medical Center. Creatine shows potential to boost cognition in Alzheimer's patients. Just type in creatine Alzheimer's. Creatine and cognition and aging, a systematic review of evidence in older adults, a major study. HHS Public Access. Effects of creatine supplementation on cognitive function of healthy individuals, a systematic review of randomized controlled trials. And it's not just good for your brain, it's good for your heart, your muscles, everything. Everybody always thinks of it for muscles, but it's every organ, folks, and you got to get the right kind of creatine. We have the best. Here's BBC telling the truth. The bodybuilding supplement that boosts brain power. I mean, my God, I was taking creatine in high school. I could bench press 350 pounds, weighed 180 pounds. Squatting 600. My strength just exploded once I got on creatine. But what's it do for your brain? Want bigger gains in your brain? Six facts about creatine and brain health. Get your creatine already discounted and get a free bottle of Irish Sea Moss and or Shilajit until Monday, March 2nd at midnight, and it funds the operation. Take action now at TheAlexShowStore.com. Plus, 25% off all apparel, t-shirts, hats, and hoodies ends midnight, Wednesday, March 4th. Take advantage of that. We have the widest selection of Patriot apparel and some of the best designs. I set out when our sponsor said, what do you want? I said, I want the widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, hats, you name it. I want classic Americana stuff. I want pro-Trump stuff. I want InfoWars stuff. I want comedy stuff. I want just Americana stuff. Christian, Crusader, pro-life, pro-Jesus, classic 1776 stuff, quality Leering Center, you know, joke stuff, classic InfoWars gear. I mean, just cool shirts saying, I love America with a German pointer on it. I mean, just good stuff. All sorts of resistance to tyrants is obedience to God Punisher shirts. I mean, there are some kick-ass stuff there. Look at that one, American Supply Co. I designed that bad baby. I gave the concept great guys over there and gals. All up in Arkansas, where Bigley's based. America established 1776 Supply Company. Woo! I like it. It's got a cool deal on the right-hand shoulder. And there's just, it's over 700 shirts now. That's the only problem, is that you find a shirt, you get it, you like it, you want to buy another one. Takes me like, if you don't remember the name of the shirt, it takes you like an hour to find it. But that's a good problem to have.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the final segment of the War Room. We're talking about the war with Iran and the corresponding collapse in American support for the state of Israel. Stories at Axios.com. America's slipping sympathy for Israel. For the first time in 25 years of Gallup polling, more Americans say they sympathize with Palestinians than with Israelis. A striking shift in U.S. public policy. It's more than striking. I'll show you a timeline here in just a second. The reversal reflects a dramatic shift in attitudes towards Israel, a key U.S. ally, after its war with Hamas triggered a humanitarian crisis and reshaped the Mideast. The difference, 41% who sympathize more with the Palestinians versus 36% for the Israelis, is not statistically significant, Gallup notes, but the trend over the last year shows how suddenly U.S. public opinion has soured on Israel, slipping 10 percentage points in 12 months. At the same time, Israel's favorability rating declined to its near historical low in Gallup's polling. The shift in sympathies is driven largely by political independents who reported more pro-Israel views in the past, according to Gallup. Those surveyed now say they sympathize with Palestinians over Israelis, 41% to 30%. 7 in 10 Republicans still say they sympathize more with the Israelis. Overall, Americans still have more positive view of Israel, 46% view it favorably, than of the Palestinian territories, 37%. Since last year's polling, a fragile U.S. brokered ceasefire was struck, and is now in its second phase. However, deadly Israeli strikes have continued. Nearly the entire population of Gaza was displaced by the war, leaving hundreds of thousands exposed to the elements, according to the United Nations. Any hope of lasting peace depends on Hamas giving up its weapons and Israel pulling its troops back rather than trying to disarm Hamas by force. Axios's Barak Ravid reported in January. A survey of 1,001 U.S. adults was conducted between February 2nd and 16th and has a margin of error of around 4 percentage points. And so there's the image that shows the fatal cross where support for Palestine rises above support of Israel. And this is, that timeline there was something like between, you know, 2005 and 2025 or 2026 when it finally crossed over. But it gets even more interesting when you expand it out even further and you look at several decades of American sentiment on Israel. Here's the timeline. And so you see it starts in the late 60s and it's, you know, fairly consistent all the way to the mid 90s when there's that little instance. That must have been the Oslo Accords, I would guess, like early 1990s. But it starts to get a little bit, you know, the fluctuations start to intensify. But here you start to see Israel climb. And this is the late 2000s, and it keeps climbing right until 2023 when it does a nosedive. So in my opinion, it's not, and let's keep this image up, it's not just that it's passed over for the first time. I think this whole thing has been orchestrated because of this chart. Do you understand what I'm saying? That from about 2000, with, you know, minor inconsistencies, from about 2000 to about 2023, it was a steady climb of Israeli popularity in America. You know, they were working hard, consistently, you know, running their operations. And I don't want to talk in vagaries here. Let me tell you about the operations that they ran. Jordan Satchel was part of it. It was captured in the Lobby documentary by Al Jazeera, where they talk about just some of the methods that they use to increase the perception of support of Israel in America. One of them would be they would run Facebook groups about random non-affiliated topics. They'd have a coffee group. Hey, share your pictures of coffee. A group about kittens, you know, oh, come here to look at pictures of kittens. And that's what they were. They were Facebook groups about certain interest topics that were broad and, you know, totally apolitical. Kittens, coffee, you know, whatever. Little TV shows, whatever it is. And then just, you know, every 10th post or so, or every month or so, these groups would just put out a little notice just going, hey, by the way, you know, we stand with Israel and, you know, Israel's great and, you know, we all love Israel over here. And then we'd go back to kittens, back to coffee. Now, it would never even occur to someone like me to run something like that because it seems like the return of investment is so little, right? You're going to spend all this time and effort making a page popular, sharing content on it, managing the community to make sure it continues to grow, blah, 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 only to like just casually put in these little drops every month that, hey, by the way, we like Israel. Anyway, but I'm not thinking like a, you know, global cabal with massive resources and back end control of social media. So actually for them, it's a hell of a lot easier. You pay a couple interns, you get a couple college students to run this stuff for you. And you do it enough and you have enough of these groups doing it, then the effect is subtle but widespread and substantial. Because what it does is normalize the idea that, well, these aren't, you know, they don't know these are Israeli groups. They just think, well, you know, it's a normal thing. It's normal for people just to announce they support Israel. And hey, the coffee people like Israel, the cat people like Israel. I guess, you know, all the people I like Israel. I guess I like Israel too. Like that. And when you do it enough, and you got to understand, like, it's literally explained verbatim by the people doing it, and they're being paid for, they're funded by the Israeli government, who is doing this as a psychological operation against the American people. This is one of their methods, and they have a lot of methods like this. So, they spent two decades slowly building up, like a savings account, just squirreling away the pennies, just saving up goodwill for Israel, saving up good optics for Israel. Behaving themselves as good as possible, even though it wasn't necessary, running programs to maximize American support of Israel continuously, getting politicians to continually reiterate their support of Israel undying forever. And they build this up and they build this up and they build this up. And when it's at its absolute maximum is right when October 7th happens. Now, we know that October 7th was a false flag in many regards. The killing that was done in large part by the Hannibal Directive and Israeli gunships killing their own people in order to make it look more devastating than the attack actually was. They didn't respond to the attack for several hours after it had begun with absolutely no explanation for the delay beyond it was on purpose and willful. They also knew about what was happening from various reports. The Egyptian intelligence had told them, Assad themselves had identified the plot a year before. They knew it was coming. They let it happen. They didn't respond until it had been able to, you know, get finished. And then they did the Hannibal Directive and killed a bunch of their own people to make it look even worse than it was. And then on top of that, they lied through their teeth about 40 babies in ovens and dozens and dozens of rapes being carried out. Like, just those just didn't happen, but it didn't matter because in the aftermath of October 7th, everybody was so anxious and terrified that, you know, and operating entirely off fear that they were, you know, willing to accept these ridiculous claims and still support them to this day. It's absurd. So, you know, I can't prove it, but to me, it seems like the way I would do it. Like if I was planning a terrorist attack by Hamas to give Israel the green light to utterly destroy Gaza, knowing that it would get the Iranian proxy armies into the conflict, knowing that I could not only systematically and ruthlessly and systemically destroy every building in Gaza, but I could also take large swaths of Syria and Lebanon and even parlay this into an ultimate showdown with Iran. Then what I would do before that is spend about a decade building up positive American sentiment in Israel. You want that number as high as you can humanly get it because you know it's about to collapse and you want to be able to hang on to it as long as humanly possible. So if we can bring up that chart one more time, you will notice that as of October, 2023, or, you know, maybe just a little bit before, the sentiment about Israel from Americans was the highest it's ever been and for a sustained period. And only then did it collapse. I have the feeling that's not an accident. I have the feeling that, in a way, that was intentional. The timing was not a coincidence. But, of course, it has collapsed and collapsed dramatically. And it's caused a bunch of people to turn against Israel. So Tucker Carlson, you know, points out that there's really nothing they can do to turn this around. And just to, you know, reemphasize what I was saying sort of at the end there, it might not have come across exactly how I meant it, but essentially, I think if it was Israel's intention that they want to go to war with Iran, or they want to just bomb Iran, they want to do another redo of like the 12-day war, they'll send some bombers over, they'll take out some Iranian positions, and then it'll all go back to how it was before. And that's sort of the idea that they're putting out there, that like, this isn't going to be a big war, it's not a big showdown, it's like going to be like, nobody's putting troops on the ground, nobody's putting boots on the ground, why is everybody freaking out about like a little bombing run? No, it's not going to be a big deal. If that was the case, if they really were planning on just doing a quick and dirty in and out, you know, hit job and then back to normal, back to status quo, then they would be more concerned about the sentiment of Americans when it comes to things like the West Bank. I really think that if their intention was to go back to normal with America, then they wouldn't be putting such a strain on our relationship with the way that they're annexing the West Bank. But they are, and they're doing it very aggressively, very intensely, very ruthlessly and brutally. And in just flagrant and abject disregard and actually disrespect of the American president, who has repeatedly and in no uncertain terms told them not to do this. So if they were actually concerned about Trump's opinion, if they're actually concerned about what Trump was going to do, and if they wanted their relationship with America to be in the best condition it could be after a war with Iran, then they would just put the brakes a little bit on the West Bank stuff. I mean, the West Bank, there's nothing like compelling the West Bank thing to happen, right? There's no threat from the West Bank. Gaza or Hamas doesn't control West Bank like it did Gaza. The West Bank doesn't have Hamas cells and tunnels throughout it. It just doesn't. So there's no like excuse of just like, oh no, we got to get this. I know America doesn't like it, but we don't have a choice. Like, no, they have a choice. And if they cared about what America thought, if they actually were concerned with preserving their relationship with America, they wouldn't be behaving the way they are. It's just another piece of evidence to me that says they're done with America. They don't care what we have to say. They do not fear our retaliation. They do not fear our disapproval of what they're doing. And they're doing it almost in a way designed to be disrespectful and basically spitting in the face of Donald Trump. So I have a lot of articles about this alone, right? We can just go through some of them. And they get completely and utterly insane. Let's just go through some of these. These are all stories from this week here. I think you'll be surprised at some of them if you haven't seen them before. But let's just see what we have here. So from yesterday, UN rights chief, Israel aims to bring, quote, permanent demographic change to West Bank and Gaza. Israel's action in the West Bank and Gaza Strip seemed aimed at creating a, quote, permanent demographic change. Taken together, Israeli's actions appear aimed at making a permanent demographic change in Gaza and the West Bank, raising concerns about ethnic cleansing, Turk said in a speech before UN's Human Rights Council in Geneva, which, of course, and obviously, how the Pentagon is quietly building Donald Trump's concentration camps. These are a little bit different, but I think these tie into what we'll talk about in just a second, which is the anti-Semitism drive, how Epstein helped build Israel's global spying dominance. So again, we'll get back into this in just a minute. And we've got the police state here. Sorry, let me find the... Sorry, there's just too much. Sorry, we'll get back to this as well. This is all about censorship. Israeli officials organized prison tour for Jewish settlers to observe the torture of Palestinians. So this is one thing they're doing now. This is from yesterday. Israeli prison authorities gave a tour of maximum security facility to Jewish settlers where they held a Torah lesson and observed the abuse of Palestinian prisoners. Israeli media reported on the 23rd of February. Kobi Yaakobi, head of Israel's prison system, invited 20 members of the synagogue in Har Homa, an illegal West Bank settlement near Jerusalem, on a, quote, safari tour of Nitzan maximum security prison. Palestinian detainees, including one alleged member of Hamas's elite Nakba forces, were handcuffed and forced to lie on the ground and be observed by the visitors. The Jewish settlers ate an indulgent lunch in front of the prisoners who were fasting for the Islamic month of Ramadan. The settlers also blessed the prison guards. Israel runs a network of torture camps where rape, physical and psychological abuse, inhumane conditions, deliberate starvation, and denial of medical care are common, according to Israel rights group B'Tselem. The transformation of prisons into a network of torture camps is part of the Israeli regime's coordinated onslaught of Palestinian society aimed at dismantling the Palestinian collective, this Israeli group noted. So you've got the settlers from the West Bank actually taking little safari tours to observe and I guess be entertained by the torture and starvation of the Palestinian prisoners. That's cool. Israeli defense minister declares intention to permanently occupy parts of Syria, Lebanon, and Gaza. Israeli's defense minister, Israel Katz, has declared that the Israeli military will maintain permanent control over parts of Syria, Lebanon, and Gaza and remain inside West Bank refugee camps, quote, in place of the residents. Speaking at a graduation ceremony for combat officers at Baha 1, Katz framed the policy as a continuation of Israel's so-called historical military legacy, referencing King David and his generals. Katz emphasized that the Israeli military will maintain a permanent presence in key areas across the region, including northern West Bank refugee camps, southern Gaza, parts of southern Lebanon, the Golan Heights, and other border zones, aiming to suppress resistance and secure Israeli settlements within occupied territories, which, of course, is in line with the Greater Israel Project and their continuing expansion of their control as they, in their own words, quote-unquote, Judaize the areas that are now not under their control. Smotrich says, in the end, Israel will occupy Gaza and establish settlements there. Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich on Monday said he expects Hamas to be given an ultimatum on its finance disarmament, saying it is estimated in the coming days Hamas will be given an ultimatum to fully disarm and demilitarize, saying that in the end, Israel will occupy the Gaza Strip and reestablish Jewish settlements in the coastal Palestinian territory. Of course, again, in just blatant, abject, and disrespectful contradiction to Trump's demands. Israeli soldiers shot a Palestinian boy and stood around as he bled to death, video shows. This one's actually even crazier. So in November, a 14-year-old Palestinian boy, Jad Jadala, was shot at close range by Israeli soldiers in a refugee camp in occupied West Bank. As Jad lay collapsed in an alley, the soldiers created a cordon around him and blocked two Palestinian ambulances from reaching him. According to video footage and eyewitness testimony, the soldiers, 14 in total, then stood around Jad casually for at least 45 minutes while he bled from one or more gunshot wounds. All Israeli soldiers receive training and trauma treatment, and any Israeli combat unit should contain a specifically trained medic. But none of these soldiers appeared to give Jad life-saving medical aid. At points, they appeared to ignore repeated attempts from Jad to get their attention. So you can just imagine the scene of a 14-year-old boy being shot. He was unarmed. He didn't do anything, but his family, his friends are, like, desperate. Their ambulance is literally trying to get to him. He is, like, using the last bit of energy he has, the bit of life draining out of his body to, like, try to get attention from the soldiers who are perfectly aware of what's happening and are enjoying the spectacle of a little boy bleeding to death slowly in front of them over 45 minutes. And this is in the West Bank. It's not Gaza. Again, no Hamas there. These are just people who've lived there for 2,000 years who the Israelis showed up and shoved a gun in their face one day. But the craziest part, and I don't think I have the video, but it is out there and you can find it if you'd like. There's actually video of the Israeli soldiers picking up a rock and going and laying it right by Jad after he died so that they could say he was throwing rocks at them. It's literally on video. The Israeli Defense Forces told the BBC that soldiers had provided additional medical treatment, but a spokesperson refused to give any details. This is all on camera. It's all a lie. The IDF also accused Jad of throwing a rock, which, under their rules of engagement, can permit soldiers to use lethal force. But the footage of the incident shows an IDF soldier dropping an object next to Jad after he was shot, then taking a photograph of it. An action Jad's family and leading human rights groups say appears to be an attempt to frame him. Okay, so this is like the type of activity they get up to. This is just like what it's like to be a Palestinian in the West Bank. You don't have to do anything wrong necessarily. You don't even have to be an adult. As a child, you can just be murdered by the Israelis who, you know, the injury wasn't even fatal, except that they stood there for 45 minutes while you bled out. And then they'll put a rock by your body, take a picture of it and say, look, he was a threat. Like literally, like cartoonishly the worst thing you could imagine, like, American cops doing. There's all those, like, skits of, like, oh, we'll plant the drugs on him. Like, they just do that out in the open. It's on video, and they just deny it as if we can't see it with our own eyes. And it works because nobody's going to hold them to account because the people in power in their country approve of this behavior, and they have blackmail or some other, you know, sort of Damocles hanging over the leadership of any country that does concern itself with human rights and would intervene. It would be America or Western Europe, and they're all firmly under the thumb of the very people carrying this out. So this is all in context of Donald Trump making explicit and perfectly clear demands that Israel stop this behavior. This was about a couple of months ago. It's probably 4 months ago. President Trump, I will not allow Israel to annex the West Bank. We have a video of this. I've referenced it a lot. We should probably just keep it in the Daily Show folder so we can play it, because it constantly needs to be reminded of how they are just doing this directly and offensively in the face of Donald Trump and his very explicit demands. Let's watch.
Did you promise leaders this week that you would not allow Israel to annex the West Bank? Is that something that you said?
I will not allow Israel to annex the West Bank. No, I will not allow it. It's not going to happen.
Did you speak with Netanyahu about this directly?
Yeah, but I'm not going to allow it. Whether I spoke to him or not, I did. But I'm not allowing Israel to annex the West Bank. There's been enough. It's time to stop now, okay?
Okay, we have an update to this. He is allowing it. Yes, he is allowing it. They are annexing the West Bank. They're doing it aggressively and rapidly. And if they cared about maintaining relationships with America, they'd probably choose a different tack. I think it's more evidence that they do not intend to be friends with America after we do their dirty work and destroy Iran for them. And this is not a historically, like, out of the ordinary, right? How did Israel get founded in the first place? They convinced the English nation to first take over the area because they claimed it was going to be strategic for World War One. It wasn't actually. It caused a lot of problems for World War One since they were routinely removing people from the front lines where the actual battle was going on in order to take over Israel. Like, it was totally insignificant in terms of strategy, but, like, a lot of English resources went into taking over that when they needed those resources desperately on the front line in France. This is World War One. So they take over Israel. They come up with a mandate program that gives them control over it. They help establish a Jewish state there and basically do all the dirty work. They do the fighting. They found the country. They get it all organized. And then as soon as it gets established, what happens? The very people they were helping turn on them, bomb the King David Hotel. They start the Likud or whatever. I can never remember these two, the two terror gangs that formed the IDF initially, the Stern gang and the, it's not Likud, that's the other one, but Lehi and the Stern gang, they bombed Britain and killed a bunch of British people and caused terror that they blamed on the Arabs, but basically drove Britain out. They used the British army to get what they wanted, founded the country. As soon as the job was done, it wasn't thank you so much. It wasn't a negotiated, no, it was terrorist attacks and driving the British out. Okay. Happens over and over. What happened to Russia during World War I? Germany sent Lenin over to take care of the Tsar because the Tsar was anti-Semitic and carrying out pogroms. That succeeded. Germany helps take out Russia and the Tsar, the big enemy of the Jewish people. The Bolsheviks get into power. Next thing that happens, they target Germany and try to do a communist revolution there. What happened to Britain? They went to help Germany, or they went to help defeat Germany, the Nazis, in World War II. Irgun, Stern Gang, Lehi, Haganah, yeah. These all formed the IDF. They were literal terror. I mean, Israel invented terrorism. Do you know that? Anyway, what happened to Israel after they, you know, helped destroy the Nazis and defeat Germany? What happened to England after they helped defeat the Nazis and destroy Germany? Was it all rainbows and sunshine after that, or have they been systematically destroyed to a point where they basically are it's going to be a real tough job to even recover at this point? So this happens over and over again. It's not exactly a new phenomenon. It's just America's doing it. We're in the middle of it. We're falling for it. It's stupid. It's obviously predictable. They're basically telling us that they're doing this, and yet we're doing it. And yet we still seem to be doing it for some reason. It's completely insane. And again, I really could go on and on about this, but just know that really the only attempt to, you know, rectify their collapsing reputation amongst America, which would be easily solved by just literal any level of moderation. Again, this is the absurd thing. Yeah. Here's the video. They kill the kid. The guy takes there. He just drops something next to him and takes a picture on his phone. Yeah, it's on video. I mean, they just do this stuff out in the open. Everybody knows they do it. Just nobody will stop them. So the only solution they have is to just try to censor everybody. And that's not working either, obviously. But the obvious solution would be them just to, like, stop killing Gazans, stop killing Lebanese people, stop killing Syrians, stop antagonizing Iran, and, like, it'd all be fine. But they won't do that. And so instead, the only thing they're going to do is try to silence people like me who's calling them out on it. And that ain't going to work. I'm not going anywhere. And I'm creating more of me every day. So just stop being evil.
We're engaged in world-changing information here. And now our credibility is higher than ever, but it takes funds to operate. So it's a win-win. I sell you supplements, super nutrient compounds that are the certified best, strongest, highest rated, most loved, totally tested products at thealexjonesstore.com. And we have a massive sale. Alert, alert, alert. I'm saying this live on air Thursday, February 26th. And that means you have until midnight Monday, March 2nd, to get our incredible, highest quality, concentrated creatine, private label, the top brand in the country. So good for your whole body, so good for your brain, good for everything. And you get a free bottle of Irish Sea Moss gummies and our high quality Shilajit. You get either or. You choose absolutely free with our creatine. The Alex Jones Store. com. We have the widest selection of Patriot apparel and some of the best designs. I set out when our sponsor said, what do you want? I said, I want the widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, hats, you name it. I want classic Americana stuff. I want pro-Trump stuff. I want InfoWars stuff. I want comedy stuff. Christian, Crusader, pro-life, pro-Jesus, classic 1776 stuff, quality Leering Center, you know, joke stuff, classic InfoWars gear. It's all there. I mean, just cool shirts saying, I love America with a German pointer on it. I mean, just good stuff. All sorts of resistance to tyrants is obedience to God Punisher shirts. I mean, there are some kick-ass stuff there. Look at that one, American Supply Co. I designed that bad baby. America established 1776 Supply Company. Woo! I like it. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.